welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, more U.S. lawmakers weigh in on the Iran nuclear deal. We'll hear from a former U.S. ambassador to Syria on U.S.-Iran cooperation against ISIS. Details of harvesting energy for social media devices from thin air.
It's a very interesting device for harvesting the energy from very low winds that cannot turn a turbine.
And a new song from a singer on the pop music map. It's ahead on The Voice of America. President Obama has received good and bad news about congressional support for the international Iran nuclear agreement reached last month. My colleague Victor Beatty is following this story and is here to tell us all about it. Welcome, Victor.
Well, hello, Susan. Ahead of a crucial congressional vote on the issue sometime before September 17th, two more Democratic senators on Tuesday announced their support of the deal that limits Tehran's nuclear program while lifting global sanctions. Both Rhode Island senators Sheldon Whitehouse and Jack Reed announced their backing. But on the same day, the ranking member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, New Jersey's Robert Menendez, in a speech, said he'll vote against the deal when an expected resolution of disapproval is brought before the Senate.
In essence, we thought the agreement would be rollback for rollback. You roll back your infrastructure, and we'll roll back our sanctions. And at the end of the day, what we appear to have is a rollback of sanctions and Iran only limiting its capability, but not dismantling or rolling it back. So what do we get? We get an alarm bell should they decide to violate their commitments and a system for inspections to verify their compliance. That, in my view, is a far cry from significant dismantling.
Senator Menendez announced his opposition in a speech to students at Seton Hall University 2 weeks after the Senate's third-ranking Democrat broke ranks with Mr. Obama, announcing his opposition. That, Senator Chuck Schumer. Regional analyst Ian Lustig of the University of Pennsylvania told me, critics like Senator Menendez failed to offer a viable alternative to the agreement with Iran.
Critics such as Senator Menendez don't offer an alternative. They act as if there's a better plan out there to make it less likely that Iran would eventually get a nuclear weapon or less likely that Iran would, in some other ways, be less troublesome to the United States. The fact is that the purpose of the negotiations was to reduce as much as possible the threat of destabilization of the Middle East, including, and in one of those threats is an Iranian nuclear weapons. This deal, obviously, really to almost all real experts, is the best way forward. Certainly, it prevents Iran from having a nuclear weapon for 8 to 10 years, if not more. And in that time, makes it possible to engage that country in a way that will disincentivize it from moving forward toward a nuclear weapons capacity. The options of letting this agreement die and giving Iran essentially a carte blanche politically to go for a bomb as quickly as it wants to is the obvious alternative, especially since the United States stands alone against the entire rest of the UN Security Council, which has unanimously endorsed this arrangement. So the sanctions regime would collapse, the United States would be isolated, and Iran, faced with an aggressive talk from Israel, and which is armed with nuclear weapons, would probably have a much more confident and easier route to get a nuclear weapon than it would under these terms of this agreement.
If lawmakers reject the agreement in this resolution of disapproval and the president has to veto it, is that politically difficult for him?
No. It won't be politically difficult for him. He is expecting that that will happen. He would prefer it if it didn't get to the veto, but he'll definitely veto it. He's expecting that. Of course, if enough Democrats defect so that his veto is overridden, that would be a catastrophic loss for him, and I would say for the country.
Is there a sense that this agreement will go on whether or not Congress agrees to it or not?
Well, yes. I mean, Congress will not agree to it. The question is, what if Congress overcame the president's veto? Then the agreement between the rest of the world and Iran would go forward, and the Congress would try to stop it by ratcheting up sanctions. They probably wouldn't be able to do very much if the president stood in the way, But what would occur, since the congressional sanctions would still be in place, is that a new world economic order would start to develop in which the countries and businesses and corporations would be able to do business with Iran because they would cut ties with America's banking system. And that would isolate us and punish us economically for standing on the sidelines.
Thank you, Victor, for that report.
All right, Susan.
The senators who just announced their positions on the Iran nuclear deal have been attracting quite a lot of attention on Twitter in the past day. Michael Lippin joins me now in the studio for a look at that. Michael, what's the reaction to their decisions?
Hi, Susan. Well, I'd like to start with the two Democratic senators from Rhode Island who came out in favor of the deal. One of them, Senator Whitehouse, is on Twitter at SenWhitehouse, and he has 23,000 followers. He tweeted this message on Tuesday: "I thank the many Rhode Islanders who shared their thoughts with me about the Iran deal. Here is why I'll support it." And then he linked to a joint statement with his Rhode Island counterpart, Senator Jack Reed. In that statement, Senator Whitehouse said, "I've decided to support the agreement with Iran because it could open a new doorway in the precarious Middle East. I do not see a better credible option." Now, most of the comments that he got in response to that from Twitter users were positive, thanking him for giving peace a chance. But there was criticism. Some Twitter users warned Senator Whitehouse that he's being naive to trust Iran and making a mistake that will lead to more conflict in future. Senator Jack Reed also is on Twitter at SenJackReed, and he has 14,000 followers.
Well, Michael, how about New Jersey Senator Menendez? What kind of response did he get?
Well, Senator Menendez has a bigger Twitter following than both of the Rhode Island senators put together. He's got 50,000 followers for his handle at Senator Menendez. On Tuesday, he tweeted this: "If Iran is to acquire a nuclear bomb, it won't have my name on it. Here's my speech on why I'll vote no, along with my alternate Iran deal plan." Now, that tweet has generated a ton of comments. Some Twitter users responded by saying, "Thank you for defending the interests of the United States and its Mideast ally Israel, which has been sharply critical of the Iran deal." But quite a few users also accused Menendez of being unduly influenced by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and being more concerned with Israel's interests than America's. Now, in his speech, Senator Menendez said, "I know that in many respects it would be far easier to support this deal as it would have been to vote for the Iraq war at the time. But I didn't choose the easier path then, and I'm not going to now." Susan?
Well, thank you, Michael. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Could playing Tetris, a classic video puzzle game, help drug addicts and compulsive eaters overcome or reduce their addictions or obsessions with food? Psychologists in the UK and Australia worked with 31 college students as test subjects. The students were randomly sent text message prompts 7 times throughout the day over a week-long period, asking them to report any cravings they were feeling. About half of the volunteers who reported cravings were also told to play Tetris on an iPod for 3 minutes. Following gameplay, the subjects again reported on the intensity of their cravings. The researchers found that playing Tetris can weaken cravings for drugs, cigarettes, alcohol, coffee, and food by as much as 20%. Lowered cravings were also observed in the volunteers for sex and sleeping. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The United Nations Security Council has repeated its demand that all parties to the conflict in Syria must engage in good faith in special envoy efforts and work towards a political solution to the years-long crisis, also expressing its gravest concern that parts of Syria are under control of Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant and al-Nusra Front. The Security Council reaffirmed its resolve to address all aspects of the threat, calling on all parties to commit to putting an end to terrorist acts perpetrated by these groups. International Edition's Mohamed El-Shenawy followed a panel discussion at the Middle East Institute focusing on prospects of U.S.-Iran cooperation in fighting Islamic State, and he joins me here in the studio. Welcome, Mohamed.
Thank you, Susan.
Well, Mohamed, first off, experts are speculating about such prospects. What did you find out?
All these speculations, Susan, are based on expectations that the nuclear deal with Iran could serve as a window of opportunity for such cooperation. However, Robert Ford, former U.S. ambassador to Syria, has a totally different perspective.
In the absence of reconciliation between, on the one hand, these Shia militias and the Sunni Arabs on the other side, it's not clear that the Americans and the Iranians are going to be able to work a whole lot on the Islamic State problem in Iraq. If the Americans saddle up too closely to the Iranian-backed militias, they will actually help the Islamic State recruit more people.
Ambassador Ford said, "The real problem in Iraq now is the lack of confidence among Sunni Arabs toward the Shia-controlled government in Baghdad and the slow progress in the reconciliation efforts."
Well, how about the prospects of cooperation with Iran and Syria, where Iran is heavily backing the Syrian regime?
Well, Susan, according to Ambassador Ford, it's even more complicated in Syria because the Assad regime is more interested in preserving its grip over what's left from the Syrian territories than trying to retake the large areas that the Islamic State has seized. Also, Iran will not be of any help in combating the Islamic State in Syria because its priority is to protect the Assad regime, as Ambassador Ford explains.
It's very difficult for me to imagine that in the short term, the Iranians will not use some small portion of financial resources that they reacquire as part of the sanctions relief over the next year and a half, that they will not use some portion of those resources to help Lebanese Hezbollah, which is really now fighting full out in Syria, and that they would also use some of those resources to shore up the Assad government, both economically in terms of economic assistance, but also in terms of war material.
So to sum it up, Iran is not willing to back off its support for the Syrian regime and will never put thousands of Iranian troops on the ground to uproot the Islamic State fighters. That's why Ambassador Ford rules out any prospects of U.S.-Iranian cooperation in fighting the Islamic State in Syria. Ambassador Ford concludes that long-standing grievances and events on the ground do not suggest an immediate change for an effective American-Iranian collaboration against the Islamic State in Syria or in Iraq.
Well, thank you, Mohammed, as always, for your analysis.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up on International Edition, the slightest of breezes charging you up, and Robin Thicke releases a new single. All portable electronic communication devices require regular access to an energy source, which can be a problem for soldiers in the field. The U.S. Army is testing a new device that harvests energy from even the slightest breeze. VOA's George Putish is following the story and has joined me here in the studio. Welcome, George.
Welcome. Thank you.
First of all, what is this new device?
It's a very interesting device for harvesting the energy from very low wind that cannot turn a turbine, but still has some power. So this new device actually harvests the energy of the wind and turns it into electricity of enough power to charge small electronic devices such as portable communication devices, smartphones, tablet computers, and such.
Well, how flexible is this to take out into the field? You know,
it's
whether it might be
flexible.
Raining or muddy or jungle or whatever.
Yes, correct. What they had in mind is soldiers in the field, and where they obviously do not have always access to energy sources. So it's a light portable device that can be set up very quickly and can turn into the wind like a wind vane. So if you leave it overnight, for instance, it will charge its supercapacitor, which is another advanced technology for storing electricity, and obviously during the day or during the night, you can connect your device and charge your batteries.
Well, this has been a problem for a long time since the technology age started. How come it's now that we're getting this? Was it advances that they've made that has brought this about?
That's very interesting. Actually, the technology has been around for a long time. As most of us know from high school, if you move a magnet through a coil of wire, it will actually induce some electric power. But the challenge was how to turn the fluttering of a strip of cloth in light wind, how to turn that into movement of the magnet through the coil. And that's what they managed to do, and it proved to be effective.
Well, can you tell a layman like myself how it works without getting too complicated?
Yes, I can try. And everybody has seen the window blinds flutter in wind, right?
Yes.
It's basically a set of vertical blinds or strips of light cloth that are at their bottom connected to coils that move left and right. And the coils are wound around magnets. So when they move left and right, they produce electrical power, right? Of course, one of the great challenges was how to convert that electrical power, which goes up and down all the time. It's not constant, right? How to turn it into a constant stream of direct current electricity, which they managed to do. They designed a special electronic device that turns this very unstable electric current produced in the coils to a stable direct current that can charge the supercapacitors and store that electricity.
Well, this sounds like something just about anybody could use.
It's almost true, except you would have to have this electronic device that can turn the unstable current into a constant source of power.
Well, it's very interesting. Thank you, George, for joining us here in the studio.
You're welcome. Anytime.
This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
A heat wave in the Middle East is being blamed for dozens of deaths in Egypt and sending hundreds of people to the hospital. Jordan, too, is feeling the heat. This worker in Amman says he's reworked schedules because of the weather.
We work in the morning, rest at noon, then continue our job at night.
Extreme summer weather poses serious health risks. So to keep safe, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention suggest preparedness as its number one tip, especially if you're caring for children, older adults, or those with chronic medical conditions. Make sure they can get to a cooler area on a hot day. The CDC also warns not to leave children or pets inside of a car on a hot day. When it's parked in the sun, temperatures can soar to 55 to 78 degrees Celsius. Earlier this year in India, more than 2,000 people died in a stifling heat wave. More than 1,000 died in Pakistan. I'm Philip Alexiou for VOA's Living Better.
It's time for some news from the music library. Robin Thicke's hit song, Blurred Lines, put him on the pop music map, both for its popularity and the controversy it generated. Now Robin Thicke has a new album and has released the first single from it. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with Border Crossing's host Larry London about the track, Back Together.
You know his song, Blurred Lines, and you know the controversy it generated, but Robin Thicke has a new song now, Back Together. Larry, this is his first tune since his second album, which didn't do too well.
That's right. 2013 was Blurred Lines, and then he followed that up a year later with an album called Paula. In a failed attempt to win back his then-estranged wife, Paula Patton, who's an actress, the two officially divorced this past year. And so now he's back. He's got another album called Morning Sun, and it's expected to be released before the end of this year. So we've got the first song off the new album.
And he has some help from some very famous friends.
Absolutely. Right? Timbaland, Max Martin, and he's working with his good friend Pharrell on the new album. They had great success on Blurred Lines, so why not do it again?
Didn't I rock with you all night? Wasn't it good enough? Don't lie. Didn't you tell me that I blew your mind? Brought out the animal in me. Nobody else could tame that beast. Why did you have to go and say goodbye? Now all I want.
Now, speaking of blurred lines, I understand that Marvin Gaye's family, the settlement between Robin Thicke and Pharrell and Marvin Gaye's family has changed?
That's right. It was $7.1 million, and Robin Thicke took it to court and contested the amount, and so the judge did amend the reward to $5.1 million. Marvin Gaye's family then said, hey, let's go back to court, and the judge said, not again. It's $5.1 million, and that's what the penalty will stand.
Okay, so now Robin Thicke is Alan Thicke's son.
Yes, and Gloria Loring.
And Gloria Loring. Mm-hmm. And he did have a smash. I mean, two summers ago, Blurred Lines, every time you turned on the radio, you were hearing that song.
That song created controversy, if you remember. Twerking on the MTV Music Awards.
I do remember the twerking. I remember that with Miley Cyrus.
Right, right.
And several other young women in various stages of undress. But now, this tune, he has help from Nicki Minaj.
Yes, exactly. He also, by the way, didn't write this song. It was written by somebody else because people thought, well, back together, wouldn't that be another attempt to get Paula back? And he said, no. He said, I like the idea and the concept of the song, but no, I can't claim that I wrote it because I didn't. But Nicki Minaj does appear on this particular song. She's hot right now. She's on tour for her own album. She's getting a wax figure at Madame Tussauds Wax Museum. And she took time out to be in his video, which is looking very hot for this song. And she's on the single as well.
All right. Well, if you have any comment about Robin Thicke's new single, Back Together, you can hit Larry up at VOA_music. Also, you can listen for his show, Border Crossings. That's on our website, www.voanews.com. If you want to send a tweet to us here at International Edition, that's VOA_IE.
I get more than when they nodding. Kitsy on fleek is popping. I'm every popping. Okay. Just for the record, that hard is what I'm copping. Yeah. Blasting two pockets, some fishnet stockings. You know you missed this ride. M.I.S. just missed this pie. Used to call me Hillary, cause I ride them. Ring, 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 ring. Put a ring on it or ding.
Thanks for joining us for International Edition.
Is love to this one? You should have climbed up.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Armed militants in Mali have stepped up attacks against the United Nations peacekeeping mission and Malian security forces, continuing a deadly campaign aimed at destabilizing the West African nation. The militants laid siege to a hotel in central Mali last week, leaving 17 people dead. The attack began early August 7th and ended after 24 hours when Malian security forces stormed the hotel in the city of Savare. The assailants killed 9 civilians, 5 of whom worked as contractors for the UN mission, and 4 Malian soldiers. An unknown number of attackers died in the assault. On August 9th, gunmen killed 10 civilians in a village in northern Mali. And on August 10th, 3 Malian soldiers were killed in central Mali when their patrol vehicle hit a landmine. These incidents show that despite the peace agreement signed in June between northern armed groups and the government, much work still needs to be done to restore security to the country. The United States commends all parties, the government of Mali, the CMA, and the platform, for their commitment to resolving their differences through dialogue, not violence. Implementing the peace agreement won't be easy or immediate. It will require dedication and steady, sustained attention in order to succeed. We urge all parties to commit to resolving future differences through the mechanisms within the accord. The parties have arrived at this agreement through a patient process of dialogue and negotiation. This peace will be achieved through hard work, mutual understanding, and cooperation. We urge all parties to the agreement to maintain the same patience, dialogue, and will to reconcile differences as they move forward.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.